Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We have an hour to go. Paul and Jordana will be here. The snow, I'm thinking, Adam, maybe August 1st. That's about when I'm expecting to stop. How about you? When's your bold, hot take about when it stops?
May 12th.
May 12th. Okay, tell people about the results you just received. Paternity
finally
test
got,
just came in.
Yeah,
and,
no, I got my...
you are the father!
DNA test back. My mom bought me a DNA test for Christmas, and I finally got my results back.
Okay, let's stop there. I've heard of other people who got that as a Christmas gift. What did you think when you received that as a Christmas gift from
That's
your mom?
What I wanted.
You
she
wanted.
She always asked me, what do I want for Christmas? And I never have had an answer until this year. I wanted the DNA test kit.
You wanted to find out if you had a different mom and dad?
Yeah,
is that
right.
What you're saying? So did you go 23andMe?
No, DNA or Ancestry.com.
Okay.
That's the route we went.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And what were you thinking? What was your expectation coming into it? Because I'm looking for mine, because I
knew I was Norwegian. My grandmother was a full-blooded Norwegian.
Here we go.
So I knew there was a big chunk of Norwegian in there. I assumed there'd be some English in there. With Carter is an English name. I always thought I was Irish, at least a little bit.
When I go out with you, I do.
Right.
Wah, wah. We'll go with other stereotypes.
So I got the results, and they're by and large predictable, except for the fact that I'm not Irish.
Not Irish.
Unfortunately.
Okay, so
and a little bit of a bombshell here, 2% European Jewish.
Oh, no wonder my father likes you.
Yeah.
You know? Welcome.
We're going to Temple
Saturday.
Yeah,
welcome to Temple Israel.
Mazel tov.
Okay, so what's your dominant percent?
Norway, 36%.
Okay.
And England, Wales, 36%. Those are the top two.
Because my father's Jewish, my mother not. Okay, is it, heck, my kids know, and I'm forgetting here. Is it
Azerbaijan?
No. Ashkenazi Jewish? Is that what it is? I forget. That's not it, but I forget the proper way to say that. I'm 48.5% because of my father. Scandinavia, Norway, 29.2%.
Wow.
And then I dropped out.
Very similar.
Brit, UK, 5.4%. French and German, 4%. Eastern European, 1.1%. Broadly Northwestern European, 9.5%. You can't pin me down.
No.
You can't put me in a category. Broadly Southern European, 0.6%. And broadly European, 1.7%.
I also have 18% Swedish and 8% Germanic Europe. Ashkenazi?
Ashkenazi Jewish. Okay. That shows my lack of knowledge about half of my percentage. I should know more. Are you concerned at all about where this data is going to go? Because it seems like every other day, whether it's our state or somewhere, where all of a sudden we're going to find out that, you know, your napkin just showed us that you killed 17 people in South St. Paul.
The craziness, and I feel confident that I've committed no major crimes. But now, who's to stop it now?
That's why I don't do it.
Yeah,
I
know a lot of people
don't want my DNA. I mean, there have been cases where they've gotten DNA from someone and that's convicted a relative. So it's not just you that's impacted when you do these things.
Yeah,
your
Adam.
Your cousin.
Yeah, Adam.
Your uncle.
Yeah. Some of the killers that I've met.
Better be clean,
your family.
Right.
I do worry about – I don't think our country spends enough time. I think this is one where Klobuchar can gain some traction on records and what is taking place. But I guess I was curious enough – to want to know that I wasn't that concerned.
I was not that concerned about it either.
So you have not done it, Shaletta, and you're worried more about yourself. You're worried about others. You're just worried about where it could go.
I'm just worried about where it could go. I'm worried about somebody using my information with the intent that I did not expressly give them.
Yep.
And I'm worried about how it impact my family with the way that, things are being hacked these days and information being out there for scammers and people to target. I don't want that kind of information out there about me. I don't.
Do you think, to both of you guys, there are some letdowns on this? There are some disappointments on this?
Oh, of course.
There are expectations. I think there probably is. I think it's more surprises, though. Do you think it's really people are angry about where it's going or they're disappointed about it?
You mean the results?
Yes.
Well, I just read a story. I think CBS did it where they got some people at the to meet up at the Underground Railroad in Brooklyn, New York, somewhere. And they had a bunch of people there and they were giving them their, you know, ancestries as a part of a Black History Month story. And two of the white guys who thought they were Scottish were there and come to find out that their families were African American. They had no Scottish blood and their families were passing as Scottish when they got to the North so that they wouldn't be captured and sent back down South into slavery. So they were completely African American and had no idea. So that's kind of what people are looking for. But a lot of times it's just, you know, you are who you expect to be.
But a lot of times you're not.
You don't think so?
No.
No?
Oh, no. See, I think there's a lot. That's why I think the disappointments come, whereas people have been raised their whole life thinking that the traditions they have are, you know, their traditions that their family's from a certain area. Then they find out they're not. Now, that'd be devastating.
Yeah,
like, I'm fairly disappointed that I thought I was Irish.
Really?
And I'm not Irish.
I'm sorry. Are you going to be okay?
Couple Guinnesses, shot of Jameson, I should be fine.
Yeah. 9 past 2. The awards kids are getting in Wisconsin. The controversy, appropriate? What was the school thinking? Or an overreaction? That story after Adams News right now. All right, let's get to this Wisconsin story. Kenosha, Wisconsin. Adam, when you think of Kenosha, Wisconsin, what comes to mind? Because I'll tell you, for me, the Twins used to have a minor league
team. Oh, yeah, Kenosha.
Yeah.
The Kenosha Hurdles?
I thought they were maybe the Kenosha Twins, to be honest. But I may be wrong. Have you traveled to Kenosha ever?
I don't know if I've been to Kenosha.
So they have a...
No, I haven't. That's on the lake. I have not been to Kenosha.
This is Tremper High School. And they have an annual banquet in March to celebrate the achievements of the cheerleading squad. Right? This traditional, you name it, whatever activity, you're going to have an event. Here are some of the unconventional awards which are announced. The Big Booby Award for the girl with the biggest breasts. Okay? With the coach giving the award to several parents among the 100-plus attending. There was the Big Booty Award for another girl. In the video, the coach presented the word saying, "We love her butt." The String Bean Award went to the freshman who was so light and skinny. The ceremony took place and showed that the squads are not immune to some of the harassment, because we think about the stories that have come out lately about the pro cheerleaders and the less money, and really the pathetic amount of money that they've been paid. The coaches describe this as good-natured teasing, but some of the parents, some of the teammates were not happy. It's drawn the scrutiny of the ACLU, which yesterday sent a formal warning that it might sue because it failed to take any meaningful corrective action in the case. The coaches, the ACLU said, had continued to make inappropriate comments to the girls, including using harassing language towards cheerleaders during the practices. The ACLU asked the district to appropriately discipline the cheerleading coaches and to institute mandatory anti-harassment training for all district employees. A spokesman for the district said earlier this week, "A clear expectation has been set that awards of this nature, are not acceptable." She added, "As far as the investigation, we are not at liberty to share personnel matters." Now, the district has been involved in other things. The district only recently dropped a dress code policy that barred girls from wearing yoga pants, leggings, and tank tops. And then the ACLU said it was selectively enforced. Four people, including a track and field coach at the school, reached out to the principal, Steve Neck, and school administrators to complain about these awards. In an email to Mr. Neck, reviewed by the Times, the track coach, Patty Hupp, wrote, "I feel that I need to tell you that for this protection of these girls," explain, "it didn't take much to see that this is extremely degrading towards women." The Times reached out to principal. He has not responded. When Neck had questioned some of the individuals, coaches involved about the awards, she told them that the Big Booty and the Big Booby Awards were first given out in 2017. The senior class had decided on them because the stunts as cheerleaders perform require a lot of physical contact. The coach also gave a brunette cheerleader a blonde wig for being ditzy girl. The coach forwarded Mr. Neck a recent email from a parent of one of the current award winners in the note, which the Times reviewed. The parent wrote the girl found the award amusing and is not shy about the fact that she earned it fair and square. The two coaches have declined to resign and are still coaching. I get, Adam, what high school kids, what college kids, what adults can do when everybody's in it. I get what's acceptable in certain groups when you're adults, certain groups younger, when it's good nature. And that at times things where people view it as within context, and others who were there viewed as out of context, that can be lighten up, that were too much in an area of sensitivity. But on this one, and you can decide it's too much of 2019, it's too much about it's going to be covered, and people are looking to jump on it, and this was going on in 1999, it'd be no big deal in 1979. But I don't know, Carter. Okay, you're a father and a great father of two young girls. Do you want to be at an event 7, 8, 9 years ago, years from now, where one of the girls might be completely uncomfortable receiving the Big Booty Award or the Big Booby Award? I guess.
No, that's completely inappropriate for
coaches and administrators.
Administrator of a school event. That's absolutely ridiculous. And stop with the, oh, get over, you know, lighten up. I mean, this is 2019 now. And
yeah,
it's absolutely ridiculous. Because you know what, too? There's still peer pressure and people who just want to fit in. And a lot of these kids, maybe who say that they're fine with this, may not be fine with it.
Correct. They might feel like they have to say
right.
that.
Right. May just be saying that because they just want to fit in.
Yeah, I'm totally out on this one. I am totally out. And how many times will we defend certain things on comedians and other adults? And, oh, by the way, there are going to be plenty of adults who can be at a work event and where they feel like they have to laugh and have to go on with it, and they don't feel comfortable with it, right? And there can be times when it's the mean girls or the mean boys who are doing different awards. And so just to say it's only allowed when it's behind the scenes, that just is a different situation, and that also can be wrong. But for a school to be this tone deaf, to think that the coaches, administrators, and parents are all going to be on board is absurd. And the criticism is just, and the backpedaling is appropriate. All right, Chaletta, do you want to go to something like this where your kids are involved and it's not even behind the scenes? And again, I want to be clear about this. I'm not defending it if it's behind the scenes. But especially when adult coaches and administrators are basically saying this is okay to give out these awards to 16, 17, and 18-year-olds.
No, it's not okay to degrade my daughter in front of everyone else on their team, and boys, it gives these boys a license to say and do some things that they shouldn't be saying and doing. They take their cues from the grown-ups And if the grown-ups are talking about booties and boobies and calling girls ditzy and putting them blonde wigs on them because they think they're not as smart as they
yep.
should be, then that gives these boys a license to do the same. And that's not the example that I want my boys to have. That's not the way that I expect them to treat their sister. And that's not the way I expect grown-ups to behave toward my daughter.
The governor of the state, Tim Walz, in about 7-8 minutes, back to the Jussie Smollett story.
Whew, I'm exhausted. It's draining.
Yeah. I think the most powerful part of the information which has come out in the last half day is what CBS News has been reporting. CBS News learned that a last-minute phone call may have saved the Empire Star from potentially being indicted.
Whoa!
Okay, so we know by now. The actor claimed that he was targeted and he was assaulted. MAGA hat, calling him out as an African-American, gay, rope around his neck, and the reaction from a lot of people. And then, as the story, from what we know, taking some definitive twists and turns, was his story holding up and questions raised about him here? Because we've talked about this multiple times now. So the two brothers, according to CBS, have told Chicago police that Smollett paid them to stage the assault. Okay? And a source close to the investigation told CBS News that the brothers were about to appear in front of the grand jury yesterday, but Dean Reynolds, long-time hard-scrabbled. Would you be a hard-scrabbled news guy? Would you be a hard-scrabbled news guy?
No.
No. Look at your hair. Look at your modern hipster haircut. You can't be. Okay.
Well, I envision somebody who's hard-scrabble, not giving a damn what anybody thinks. They're going to get the story, and I'm too
sensitive.
Too just gutless for that.
Yeah, where's my player gutless right now? And Reynolds is reporting that right before they're about to go in the grand jury, that Smollett's defense team called when they're literally minutes away from going in, and then they called it off. It's unclear exactly what the defense said. You've got a Chicago prosecutor who's recused herself. You have reports now of a DUI that took place with Smollett in 07, where he had to plead guilty to a DUI, but also providing false information. On this one, what exactly did the defense team say that all of a sudden they stopped? Because they've been trying to talk to him now for 5-6 days. Reynolds is also reporting that they want his financial records, that they are filing documents through the proper process to try to get from search warrants all sorts of information on him. The reporting also from another outlet is saying that he may have been behind this letter, which he talked about, which was sent to him, which was as inflammatory as it can be about he was targeted again because he's African-American and because he's a homosexual. I'll say the same thing I said before. This is one story that, yeah, for sure, I had initial reaction. I'm not. There's nothing wrong with an initial reaction. It's what you then do with it. And by the way, other stories, my initial reaction has been here. I held back on this one a little bit, okay? And when we talked about it the other day, and when a lot of people, especially on the right, who felt like that the president was taking too much heat on this and when conservatives were taking too much heat on this, I said, on this one, you might be 100% right. You may be right. He may have made this story up. I mean, it's not looking good for him right now. Okay? I mean, if the brothers were willing to literally say what's going on, if the accusation now is that he's lied to the police before and that he may have lied about the first letter, that is damning, to say the least. Now, what else the police know? What else he knows? And, yeah, to the public perception, when you're not talking to police, that adds to suspicion. By the way, trust your attorneys. But let's be kind of clear about this, Adam. when a lot of folks who are lecturing people about this. So you never react that way. So you've never, and we should have greater depth. The key should be when you see a story, there's nothing wrong with this reaction, but what you do initially and how you look to more information on this story. And let's play the hypothetical that he is making this up. Okay? That doesn't mean other individuals in this country haven't been targeted for various reasons, including maybe being sympathetic to the president or being African-American or being homosexual. So watch yourself on the haughtiness on this particular story, because if he is lying about this, he needs to face the fullest extent of the law. But to act like you've never reacted this way or other people haven't been targeted in this manner or for other things, you're being rather naive. The governor yesterday unveiled his budget, many items to discuss, and Governor Tim Walz is kind enough to join us. Thank you, Tim. How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm well. Thanks for having me, and thanks for mentioning that the plows are out there. I have to put my plug in to give those folks some room. It gets a little bit dangerous, and just stay back a bit from the plows, and they'll get her done.
Well, let's stay with that, and then we'll get into budget and other issues. Is there anything else, considering what is taking place with this storm or anything that's been taking place with a winter, with a month filled with snow and cold weather, where you need to step in a little bit different than just a typical normal February day in Minnesota?
Well, so far not, and that's to speak volumes to our emergency management folks, both at the county and the state level, our plow drivers and our cities that know how to handle this. We did have the situation out in Wilmer last week where we needed to activate the National Guard. They've got that SUSV, something I drove when I was in the military, can get through anything to rescue a few folks. But it did start to show us we had some issues with pressure on the gas lines with XL Energy and some heating issues. We do know that we had some water towers that froze and overflowed. And there's just things that you learn as the weather gets down to 70 below where we've had these extended snowfall events. But overall, Minnesotans are ready for this. I, you know, just give great thanks to the folks who do this on a daily basis.
On the school side, when it started happening earlier this month, and it was mainly tied to the very cold weather, you at the time said, I'm going to defer to the districts. You know, most of the districts again today are out for all the obvious reasons. Have you given any consideration to jumping into that one, or do you still feel most comfortable deferring to district by district to handle this?
I do, and there's two things about this. One is, of course, we've gotten better at this over the years. I know that they had a National Weather Service conference call at 4 a.m. with many of the metros that our folks get on and I listen into. They're able to make those decisions because these events can sometimes have a line that's very sharp and it doesn't make sense to do that. The one thing I am a little bit concerned about is when these districts cancel schools, we've got a lot of support staff like bus drivers that don't get paid, cooks that don't get paid. And so when this starts to pile up on this, we've got folks that want to work, willing to work, can't get in. It's a safety situation. That one I want to re-explore how we go about that and find out exactly what the situation is with that, you know, kind of get the legalities behind it. But I still believe that these decisions are made local control. We've seen that on not needing to call a statewide emergency because we have local emergency management that are able to make more precise decisions. And if we need to help, we'll backfill them.
Let's talk about the budget. We talked many, many times during the campaign, which you won, right? And you talked about many things. I'm going to get to the gas tax here in a second, too, because it's not like you hid that. You were talking about that throughout. But when you talked about this, you said part of the approach is going to be one Minnesota, that I'm going to reach out not just to Democrats but to Republicans, and we're going to try to do things differently. When you put together this budget – with some significant increases, which includes the gas tax and now a budget of $49.5 billion, you knew there was going to be pushback from the Republicans. Were you worried that that reaction was going to defeat a lot of what you campaigned on about let's get things together, let's work and strike a compromise, and that Republicans were going to see this as, no, this is not reaching out, this is more the Democrats doing what the Democrats want to do?
No, and again, one Minnesota doesn't mean we agree on everything, but I wanted to be clear with them. Each of these legislators, I respect their election certificates they won, and each one won in either a House district or a Senate district. I ran across the whole state. I got 1.3 million votes, that 300,000 more than anybody got, And I'm not telling them that's out of arrogance or out of some type of mandate. What I'm telling them is this is about an agenda that I laid out about what Minnesotans want to see us invest to make Minnesota strong in education, in communities that are prosperous, in healthcare, in transportation. And it's my responsibility not to promise people something for free, because, again, the alternative of not doing anything on the gas tax is you're going to spend about $1,000 a year stuck in traffic idling with increased auto repairs, with wasted time. So this is not as if someone's being super thrifty here. When you don't do these things, communities end up raising property taxes. Duluth ended up raising its sales tax to pay for roads because the state wasn't doing it. So, no, they may, you know, we'll make the argument, but what I'm making the case to them is Minnesotans were very clear. They want us to be thrifty, but they want to invest in a future that makes sense and one that can be competitive. To work it out.
20 cents and also rising with inflation. Is that realistic to think it's going to pass from the Republicans who have control in the Senate? Or just to be honest, is that the open negotiations and you know you're not going to get all 20 cents? Yeah.
Well, I came to the number because it's not what I wish to have. It's what's needed. We've got about an $18 billion shortfall over the next 20 years, expanded based on costs, based on new infrastructure that we're going to need, including electrification, including property tax increase. And I would say this, had governors done this years ago, we wouldn't be having this conversation. I'm not going to pass this on. So what I'm telling them, I didn't come up with this a magic number. I wished it wasn't that much. It's because the federal government hasn't kept pace either. I was out in D.C. last week as the representative of the other 49 governors who are asking me to tell the federal government to do a transportation bill for the first time in decades. And so what I'm going to make the case to them is that we are 27th in investment. We're a little below average in the gas tax. I know this is not a small thing to ask for, but we have the fifth highest amount of miles of roads of any state in the country, yet we're 22nd in population. If we want to maintain this world-class infrastructure, then this is what it's going to cost to do it. And I back planned from that, and that's where we came to these numbers and put the package together. Now, we can decide, you know, we're not going to tackle it all right now. I'm willing to compromise a little bit, but I'm not willing to kick this down the road because this bill we're coming due. On my own house, I hate it when I have to replace the shingles or the windows because I'd rather buy new golf clubs. But guess what? You got to maintain what you have. And if they're not willing to come to some type of agreement on this, it will get kicked down the road. And I can't allow that to happen. And Minnesotans elected me to fix this.
See, that's where we're different. I would for sure get the new golf clubs. I mean, I'd get to the shingles later. I mean, seriously, you got to have the best sticks.
I keep thinking that that's what people kind of think, that this isn't just going to happen. And the question is, if you decide to say, well, this can come from the general fund, then how are you going to make sure that you keep nursing homes up? How are you going to make sure that we keep our state parks open, our schools? And it just becomes that question. And I get it. And we built into this. This has $500 million in tax cuts for the middle class. I would make the argument that you're paying for this, whether you're putting in the tax anyway. And people say, well, you know, gas will go up. Gas fluctuates massively as it is. And that is a strain on families. But there's a tax credit in here for working families that alleviates most of that.
Governor Walz is with us. Okay, I'm getting this text over and over again because you're talking about I ran in this. It wasn't a surprise. The voters knew this and I won. Well, let's extrapolate this to the presidency. When Donald Trump came down the escalator, he kept talking wall, wall, and wall, and he won. So if the voters knew that he wanted a wall and he won, then should he get his wall as president?
I didn't say Mexico was going to pay for our roads. I said we were going to pay for the roads. The president said Mexico would pay for his wall. He made that case to them. I would argue if he thinks that's the best way to do it, then he has obviously is making his case. He's doing it in a manner that I hope that those folks who are saying the president should just build this wall, I'm not just taking the money to build roads. I'm asking the legislature to do their job. So it's not the case of that. This was a case of if once you're clear, you talk about this, that I guess there's an expectation that we would try and fulfill this. But I ask all your listeners to think of this. On your way home to Rogers on 94, in traffic jams, in that knothole that's spaghettied up in Duluth, all of those things we know we have to unwind and fix and start thinking about a future that is going to have a million more Minnesotans over the next 20 years or so. How are we going to go about investing in that? And I'm not going to promise them. Those who are saying we're going to fight tooth and nail to not let him do this, They're going to own every traffic jam. They're going to own every pothole, and they're going to own every bridge that falls into a river. I'm just asking folks, and I think it was very unusual. I campaigned saying that I wanted to raise this tax. Now, the difference, you made the analogy of that. President Trump never told us he was going to take money from our National Guard and our Army to pay for that wall. He told us Mexico would do it.
Let me ask you about the overall size of the budget. And you weren't a part of this because you were in Congress, but I looked this up today. As Governor Pawlenty finished and Governor Dayton was about to take over, Governor Pawlenty's proposed budget for 2010-2011 was $32.6 billion. That's a lot of money, 32.6. You propose now $49.5 billion. There are very, very few people in this state who've seen an increase at that type of percentage. And I know many of your ideas resonate with a lot of people. But when we're going up $17 billion and we worry about economies and we worry about the budgets we have to deal with, how is this ever going to slow down?
Yeah, well, this is about return on the investment, what you get for it. The money I spend on education will be less money spent on prisons. The money we spend on education will be more entrepreneurs creating businesses. I remind you that when Governor Pawlenty left office, he left us with a $6 billion deficit and owed our schools billions of dollars. We lost about half of our teachers, and we lost our capacity to grow into the future. So it's about how you're using that money. We've added about 500,000 people. We're now at 5.5 million people rather than 5 million. And we kicked the can down the road on things like healthcare. We kicked the can down the road on transportation after we watched the bridge fall in the river. And we got a 5-cent increase that was vetoed by the governor. So I would argue that you're going to get what you pay for. We're going to make the case, because those people who say, well, Minnesota ranks very high in tax. We lead the nation in health outcomes. We lead the nation in education achievement. We lead the nation in per capita income. And just last week, there was one that came out. We ranked third behind Utah and Hawaii as the happiest states. You get what you pay for. So if the end result is to pay the least amount of states, I'm not interested in following Louisiana's lead. I'm interested in us understanding what we get. So those folks who are concerned about this, we should find every bit of efficiency. I will not tolerate situations like putting money into technology that makes people wait for their license plates, and I'll lean right into that. So as you think about where we're going, what we're getting on the return on the investments, as we've invested this money in Minnesota, per capita incomes have gone up. People's measures of happiness and health outcomes have gone up, and we're living longer than other states. So I guess you can make the determination, return on the investment is how we do this. We look different than other states because we invest in our people.
So we're sitting here approaching the end of February. What is your number one priority at this point when it's a bill to get passed in the next couple of weeks? Budget is going to be enormous. I understand that. That is going to take a long period of time. And most likely when it gets resolved, it's either going to get resolved near the end or maybe we head to another special session. Let's hope that doesn't happen. But something that you think can get done and will get done in the next 2 weeks or approximately that area, what is that?
Yeah, I think Senator Rosen's bill on opioid reductions is a smart one. Looks like that has bipartisan support. That's another one that we will get some help making that happen. I think we'll get pharmaceutical companies help us out with payment on that. That's going to save lives. It's going to take these, you know, the absolute tragedies that happen to families, and it's economically smart for Minnesota. I think they can move that. I think we've got a piece of distracted driving legislation that can move once again, making some smart restrictions on what we do in our cars to keep people safe. And then we've got one that we need to really start thinking hard about this again, in protection of our voting system. We're unfortunately, I think for many of us, we've moved into the 2020 presidential election. With that in mind, there are still those bad actors that want to undermine our electoral system. Those three bills are sitting there waiting to be passed. I'll certainly sign them when they get to me. And I don't think there's any reason over the next couple of weeks that doesn't happen. And we can walk and chew gum. We can pass a budget. We can debate. I'm reasonable and open. But again, saying no and not coming up with an alternative, I still ask this. How are you going to fund $18 billion? That's a nonpartisan. Civil engineers tell us this is what's going to happen just to stay even. What's your plan to do that? And I'm not just looking at the 2020 election. I'm looking at an investment that'll be being still happening long after I'm dead. And that's what I think leadership is required right now.
The last thing, I saw this story today, it may have been out there for a while, where Oregon is starting to debate some in their legislature about potentially lowering the voting age from 18 to 16. We've watched it lowered before. We've seen a debate on should this be states' rights, then a constitutional amendment. I'm not sure you've heard this before, heard this debate before, but philosophically, do you see any change in the voting age at all, whether it's moving down? I don't see any scenario where somehow it could move up, but how would you react to that debate here in the state?
I think anything that gets people engaged in thinking about civic engagement is a good thing. I think there are probably 16-year-olds better prepared to do this than some 50-year-olds, maybe. I know for me, philosophically, I found myself 1 month over the age of 17 at basic training in Fort Benning, Georgia. Sure seemed like maybe I should be able to vote if I was being asked to do that at that time. So I'm open to it. I think, again, the conversation about people excited about voting, I think the biggest thing we need to do, though, is make sure we protect the integrity of that voting system, have a paper trail, get the folks who are 18 registered as easily as possible. And then probably the biggest thing we can do to ensure people care about voting is restore faith in, you know, the integrity of how we go about governing.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. We'll reach out again soon.
Have me back. Thank you.
Governor Tim Walz, kind enough to join us. We appreciate his time. Shaletta has been fabulous as always. She's been with us four straight days.
Woo.
She's going right to therapy.
Yes, I am.
They have put together a team.
It takes more than one person.
She will be quarantined after spending this much time with me and Adam. Two Hot Mamas. The podcast is available. Adam's asked to be on it. I've asked to be on it. She gives us one of these, shh. She has gives us one of these, sure, and then she looks away and shakes her head and says, yeah. No chance.
No way.
No.
Yeah.
We got momentum.
I need more DNA testing done before I can.
Yeah. We got momentum. We're not going to. Yeah. We were breaking down our DNA, and Shaletta's saying, nope.
Never.
I'm out.
You need a court order to get my blood. I'm not just giving up my blood and DNA so you can go and check to see what my cousins and second uncles on my father's side have done in life, ever. You can find another way to crack your case. You're not going to be using my blood to do it. I'm sorry.
You're not going to be indirect snitch? Is that what you're
saying? No, I'm not a snitch. Snitches get stitches and wind up in ditches. I'm with the president on that one. I need some loyalty. Keep your blood work to yourself.
Yeah, because I normally think you in sync with Donald Trump. You are in
me,
sync.
Me, Donald Trump, and April Ryan. We all.
Yeah, exactly. What time did you say, by the way, you said it, and then we were 57:40? Is that what time?
57:50.
Oh.
You're letting everybody know our, like, backside?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so how can people check out the podcast?
They can go to WCCO online and look under podcast. And it is Two Hot Mamas, myself and my girlfriend, Lindy Vinson. But guess what?
Oh.
You didn't know this. You had a secret. I got a secret.
Oh.
I'm going to be hosting 9 to 1 a.m. tomorrow night.
Oh.
I'm moving up to Fry's.
What about, is my show like the platform for 9 to 1 and just for fun? Because Carter did it. Monday. Lindsay last night, and Lindsay again.
Again, she was so good, they double dipped.
I've got an idea. I don't know if a radio station's ever done this before. A double shot of Lindsay, and now you're stepping in.
And I'm going to go ahead and do it tomorrow night. Me and Susan Blanche.
Okay, what time are you having me on? I should just wait by the
phone?
You
know what? Yeah, that's a good idea. Just wait by the phone. If it rings, answer.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how we're going
to
play that.
Anybody else? Cook's been a part of the show. I assume he's got 9 to 1 on Friday. I mean, anybody else?
Just people off the street. We're bringing them in.
Well, that might not be bad. Hey, if you're bringing people off the street at like 12:30, that could be an interesting interview.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Lindsay back tomorrow. But Shaletta will step in at different times. We just had Governor Walz on. We had DeRush on at 12:35, 1:35. We had Playing Politics and plenty of other conversations all throughout the afternoon. You can always podcast our show. When will the podcast be up, Shaletta?
I have some other stuff to do. I'm hosting the show. Okay, we'll see if maybe Dan Cook can help out and podcast a little show. But I've got to get ready for my big debut tomorrow.
Exactly.
I don't really have time.
I am done with this dog and pony show.
It's 4, 5, 4, 3, 2.
We're done.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.